I'm Chuck Smeaton from the Royal Institution of Australia, and this is the Cosmos Briefing Podcast. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land wherever you are listening from today. I would also like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Today, we present the Nature for Everyone session from the Nature Festival held in Adelaide between the 25th of September and the 4th of October this year. Nature does indeed have something for everyone, but is it within everyone's reach? In this panel discussion, we look at the diverse value of nature, some of the barriers South Australians experience in accessing it, and the showcase some of the programs that are working to make it easier for everyone to connect. Our guests today are Ben Truen, Experiential Learning Manager at Youth Inc., an Adelaide-based learning alternative designed specifically for young people aged 17 to 24 who are looking for something a bit different. Evie Eglinton, the Department of Environment and Waters National Parks Access Coordinator. Tricia Curtis, who looks after Trees for Life's Regenerate and Stepping Stone programs. And Harry Spurrier from the NeuroHero Foundation, an organisation that aims to improve the lives of teenagers with debilitating neurodegenerative disorders through virtual reality video games and at-home sustainable agriculture. The discussion is hosted by Christy Spears, Network Facilitator for the South Australian Urban Food Network and Adaptive Communities Coordinator for Green Adelaide. The discussion is hosted by Christy Spears, Network Facilitator for the South Australian Urban Food Network and Adaptive Communities Coordinator for Green Adelaide.
I grew up in a wide red place called Pukaja, on the lands of the Pinjarra people in northern South Australia. And my Pinjarra name is Nyingilda. But tonight I would like to acknowledge that we meet on Kaurna land, and Vicky Jo did a great job before, and I'll follow her up with some Kaurna language for those online. Ngadlu Tampanthi, Ngadlu Kaurna, Yatanga Imparenthi. So we acknowledge that we meet on Kaurna land, and Jack Buckskin encourages all of us to use that language and to make a hash of it. But it's really important that for the Kaurna people that their language is heard, and especially in these public forums as well. So please give it a go. There's a great video online where you can practice over and over again if you need to. So just look up Kaurna acknowledgement. Encourage you to do that. So I'd like to briefly introduce the fellow travellers tonight, but as they share their stories, you'll get to know them much more, and I've appreciated having the pre-conversations with them. So over here we've got Ben Truen, who is the experiential learning manager at Youth Incorporated, and I'll let him tell us a little bit more about Youth Incorporated. But it's a learning alternative for 17 to 24 year olds that's based here in Adelaide, who are looking for something a bit different in their education. So really keen to learn more about that. And Ben undertook a Churchill Fellowship in 2018 to research world-class share trails around the world when you still could travel. So he'll tell us a little bit about that as well. And then we've got Tricia Curtis next to me here, who I think you said for over 35 years has worked as an environmental community engagement coordinator, particularly with marginalised groups. Currently she's with Trees for Life, supporting the program Stepping Stones and Regenerate, which she'll tell us a little bit more about tonight. But yeah, someone who's always looking at how else can we engage and how can we do this better. So thanks for being here tonight, Tricia. And then we've got Harry Spurrier over here, who is a third year psychology student and sporting a great mullet, raising funds for Mental Health Month, which I didn't realise is a thing, so fantastic. And founder of a new social enterprise called NeuroHero, supporting young people with disabilities to build their skills and confidence. And it's only just begun and he's already had to adapt things, so he'll tell us a little bit about that. So he won a prize through an e-challenge through the University of Adelaide. And we also have another person that couldn't make it here tonight, but we do have a video of her. So her name is Ivy Eglinton, and she's a marine biologist and works for the Department of Environment and Water. But we've just realised that we can play the video of her so that you can get a taste of what Ivy does, because she does some awesome work around Adelaide. And we would love to share this video with you. Unfortunately, there's no sound on the video, but there's subtitles. So it just goes for 2 minutes. And I think it'll give you a real taste of Ivy, who unfortunately had to pull out really last minute and was hoping to be here tonight. But I'm sure you'll hear more about her into the future as well. So over to the tech team to play the video for us and for you online.
Hi, I'm Evie Eglinton and I work for the Department for Environment and Water. This is my story. I'm a marine biologist. I did a Bachelor of Science with a major in marine biology and became an expert in benthic habitats. I love it. Our underwater world is breathtaking and spectacular. I haven't always been in a wheelchair. I used to do the diving and driving the boat. I was training as a triathlete and I was in the top three of my age group in Australia. People used to say I was nuts for training as an elite athlete and working full-time in the field. My accident happened on the 31st of March 2009. I was riding to work with my partner. Unfortunately, as I was heading uphill, I ran into a pothole. The bike stopped and I kept going. I ended up landing on my head in the middle of the road. Straight away, I couldn't feel my abs or my legs, and I knew I had sustained a spinal cord injury. I found out that I had qualified for the World Triathlon Championships just 2 days after my accident. For the next couple of years after rehab, I trained for the Paralympics in para rowing. Unfortunately, I didn't qualify for the London Paralympics. So at this stage, I decided to stop sport and start a family. My injury occurred at T4, so this means that from the breast down, I am paralysed. I have no use of my abdominals nor my legs, and I have no control over any functions below my level of injury. This also means that being in a chair, there is no access to beaches or my old job locations, such as the boat. I kept seeing barriers to people in chairs and prams and wanted to do something about it. A few colleagues and I started a group at work to ensure that our parks had access for all. We wanted to start small, just add some information to our website, create some videos, and start talking to stakeholders. The department bought a beach wheelchair and I finally got to work in the marine environment, identifying species in a marine park sanctuary zone. But more importantly, it was the first time I could get on the beach with my boys. That is what inclusion means to me, being able to do things with my family and not sit on the sidelines. My vision is to see no barriers to participation. I would love to see national parks provide experiences and opportunities for everyone, no matter what their ability is. As nature sees no boundaries, only we do.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. And I think apparently you could hear online after all. So fantastic. Such a great story. And I hope that we can have Evie at another event, at a nature festival soon, which would be fabulous. And I just wanted to share as well, she was disappointed as well. She's missing out on all these fantastic events because just yesterday a new 4-kilometre disability accessible trail was launched down at Gondaloo Ridge in the Deep Creek Conservation Park. And she's been a part of that project, as a lot of people are in that. So if you're down that way, please check that out. But let's come back to our in-person stories now. And I've asked each panelist to try and share a story or a time when you or someone you worked with realised that natural places weren't as accessible as you once thought. So we'll start with you, Ben, with a story. You've got many, I'm sure. We'll start with one.
So I guess for me at the moment, the real, desire to know and learn more is, as you mentioned before, I work at a school called Youth Inc. And we work with young people 17 to 24 years old who, for varying reasons, haven't had their potential harnessed in mainstream education. And for many of them, they come from a pretty vulnerable place. And whether that's disability or whether that's low socioeconomic status or whether that's just a disconnection from their local community. And so my role is very much about harnessing the outdoors as a way to help them continue to build upon all those personal capabilities, I guess. So looking at how do we continue to help that young person come alongside them for them to develop their agency, to develop, you know, their resilience and their confidence and their value and to keep, I guess, instilling that belief in them that they can find a significant purpose in life. And the challenge, I guess, that we're finding recently is that as our young people are diversifying for varying reasons, that the outdoors is presenting some challenges and it's presenting some struggles in terms of, I think, as, you know, as Evie said, how do we enable all of these young people to be involved and not just sit on the sidelines? And that for me has been a really, I guess, become a bit of a passion project in recent times, that for a lot of these young people, that is very much just, I think, reflective of their life story, not necessarily just in the outdoors, but, you know, how do we find space and how do we find opportunity and time to engage young people in the main game rather than, you know, having them sit on the sidelines. And so, from a story perspective, I think, you know, we've been able to do some really cool work recently whereby I think fundamentally what it is and whatever opportunity presents itself, I think the stories for me always come back to conversation. It's that opportunity, and I think that's probably my encouragement to everyone, is that, you know, we need to give everyone the credit that they're part of their own story and that they're part of kind of formulating their own opportunities and solutions. And so when we're prepared to sort of sit and, I guess, get creative and imagine the possibilities rather than, I guess, think about maybe how things have always been done or you know, where the challenges and all of that are and are they too hard to overcome. And so, you know, just recently, like it's been a real pleasure to be able to sit alongside young people and get creative with those sorts of things. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And any kind of creative ways that you've been able to do that with people
that you'd like
to share?
I don't know that it's overly mind-blowing creative.
No.
I think for me, like, it's just about knowing that, like, I think we often come into, I think, when we're someone in a facilitating type role, we often have an idea in our head of what that's going to look like. And so if we take an example of, we want to take a group of young people mountain biking, for instance. And so that obviously is a great opportunity in one aspect, but also presents obviously some barriers from other perspectives. And so for those young people that for whatever reason can't or aren't in a position to be able to do that, for whether it be because of a physical disability or maybe it's mental health or maybe it's past experiences or whatever that might be, is that I think, you know, the creativity comes in, okay, well, what can we do? You know, and so it may not be, you know, riding through, you know, Shepherd's Hill Recreation Park, but maybe it's riding the parklands loop around the city, or maybe it's just, you know, going out to a part of the parklands and just on the grass or whatever it is, but just finding ways, I think, that can connect with each person where they're at in their story and allowing that, you know, I guess that progression of development to start from a place that they're really comfortable with.
Mm, yeah, great. Yeah. So always thinking, yeah, how to individualize it and do it outside the box. Yeah, great. Yeah, what about you, Harry? Where's that kind of realization of the lack of accessibility to nature and natural places for the people that you've been working with or yourself?
Yeah, so I've pretty much always recognized it as an issue. So it's pretty obvious if there's stairs to a park and people can't get up the stairs, that's not good. But I've been introduced to more deeper psychological level concepts for mainly kids with disability. If you can't be included in social aspects of your development, then you can feel left out, you can feel isolated, you don't have a great sense of identity. And I've spoken to a few kids with conditions like spinal muscular atrophy, which is a neurodegenerative disorder. I started talking to them at the beginning of eChallenge, which is the University of Adelaide's entrepreneurship competition. And there was a prize by Biogen, which is a pharmaceutical company. They wanted to look at neurodegenerative disorders and a solution to at least help with kids with neurodegenerative disorders' quality of life. So I spoke to several kids, and a lot of the aspects around mainly independence, their identity and their life intentions came up in conversation. And a almost simple solution was to get them out into nature in some capacity, or to get them out socializing in some capacity. And the outdoors is a great place to do that, because if you're in a tiny cramped room with six wheelchairs or something, not a great place to socialize. But if you're out in a park, it's a lot better, more calm. And sometimes with neurodegenerative disorders, cognitive impairment can come up too. So you might have a kid on the spectrum as well, and they might not want to be around everyone all the time. They might want to go off. So nature's a great place to do that too. Originally with the e-challenge, my big idea was using virtual reality as an accessible tool for kids with physical disability to go and do something that they couldn't otherwise do. And originally the concept was having a VR virtual reality garden game, so they could plant in that game, and then you'd have a real world garden in the real world. They'd have volunteers use to plant things and then sell the produce and give the kids the profit. Unfortunately, that is a very expensive endeavor. So I haven't gone about that in the same way I would have. We've looked at doing workshops. For example, during the Nature Festival, we've done an ice cream workshop on Tuesday, which you might think doesn't have anything to do with nature. But it was at the Waite campus, Adelaide University's Waite campus. They've got loads of gardens and everything there. They have a native garden and a sensory garden, so you can touch, smell, and feel different plants. The kids learned with a company called Siren about the science and biology behind some of the plants and why certain things taste or smell a certain way. And then we brought them back in with a ton of different ingredients to make their own ice cream flavors. And with the same concept of having a design like a virtual reality garden and then a product as in vegetables, this was having ice cream flavors be made. And then we're partnering with an ice cream store in Stirling called Hokey Pokey, and Tim, the ice creamery man, I think that's the word, he will be making some of the flavors depending on how crazy they are. Yeah, a lot of the kids went for very sugary options, and I don't know how well they'll taste, but some of the other kids did take inspiration from the gardens and nature, which I really think helped them not only learn something but feel confident in their abilities. If you can take an idea and turn it into some form of enterprise, I think that's really fulfilling for someone who may have looked upon their future prospects as pretty dim, and then they can now say, oh well, someone's actually bought something I've looked at, so they might want to look into micro enterprise. There's a few great little grants that have been going around for micro enterprise, and a few companies have picked them up for people with disabilities to start their own little business on the side. So that's another great thing to look into if you're interested.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, that sounds really good, and such a great kind of, in terms of the Nature Festival vision of having, you know, having that kind of off the wall, you know, connection to nature through ice cream, through flavors, through gardens, and, you know, through your tech perspective as well, that all of the, you know, all of these ways are useful and valuable and creative. And so how to keep sourcing those, and seeing how we can support people into enterprise as well. It's fantastic. And Tricia, what about you?
I suppose one of my earlier jobs, which sort of highlighted some of these issues for me, was working with people with intellectual and physical disabilities, but in my 20s, and my job was to assist people to help them set up their own business in gardening. That's what I trained in horticulture. And so I thought that was very exciting, and so I went about training these guys and how to mow lawns and things like that, and then realised, of course, they weren't able to drive cars, and they weren't able to move their lawnmowers and all this amazing equipment that we were, you know, organising. And so their job then was to literally shift these lawnmowers down the street and that's what they would have to do. And of course, that was a bit of a light bulb moment for me to realize, gosh, I can do this bit, but I can't, you know, I can't do the rest of it for them. And surely there's got to be a way. How can I possibly take that opportunity away for these guys? So it was then trying to establish ways to enable them to confidently go down the street and not feel really silly or pushing a wheelbarrow, you know, with their tools. Or and so we tried to make it a bit more fun and make sure that the work was all in a similar area and negotiate those kinds of things. But it was, like I say, it was kind of then that I realised things aren't equal, I suppose, and as much as I can try, there's always going to be those elements that I hadn't considered. And that was many years ago. And of course, now, you know, we're still coming across they're not really hiccups. That's a bit of a bad term, I suppose. It's not a fair term, you know, but some of those disasters for people where we kind of set people up and then, you know, there's the chance that they may fall over because we haven't thought through these things. And one of them just happened a little while ago in one of the programs that I run with Stepping Stones into Nature, which is to engage people, new arrivals to Australia, and to help introduce them to nature, so in a safe, comfortable, friendly way, so that they can venture out and see what our nature is about here in Australia, and to not be fearful of it. And fear, of course, is that big thing, and it's what we, you know, I started with that fear that people had about looking silly, and likewise in this particular instance where I took this big bluebird onto a nature walk and showing them, you know, the different birds and the plants, and trying to explain the difference between weeds and native plants. And I won't try doing that again for a long while. So, but then, you know, then they were starting to see, you know, these big sort of birds, which was fine. But then there was the insects that started to appear. And out of nowhere, this woman whipped out her fly spray, can of fly spray, and it's like, get, you know, to try and get rid of these things. And it's like, oh gosh, you know. And yes, all of a sudden she was quite fearful of these insects that she wasn't familiar with. Because of course she's come from a country where she lived in a high-rise building and didn't even have a balcony for a garden. And so all of these things were incredibly foreign to her. And she'd heard, of course, and seen, as all of our new arrivals do, that everything in Australia is going to kill you. We know on Facebook, because just around every corner there's a crocodile and there's a drop pear and there's, you know, a snake, and it's all going to be disastrous for us. So she was on ready. She was going to quell that fear with her can of fly spray. So, yeah, that was a good reminder as well, I suppose, that we're introducing things to people and trying to ease them in, but we're not actually considering everything that may be quite fearful to them. So both ends, you know, from 35 years ago to now, still discovering those things to support people in those journeys.
Mm. And so you're finding that there's still things that are coming up that you would never have imagined would be a fear for someone.
Yeah, that's right, because we're always, I mean, we all have fear, and that's what prevents us from doing so many things. And sometimes it's more fearful to others. I suppose, you know, if I was plonked in a place where I didn't have the language and I couldn't read the signs, and so people that come on my nature walks, it's like, you know, well, what does that sign mean? And you know, where is the toilet? And, you know, what if I get lost? What do I do? And no, I don't understand what you're saying. And I try and put myself in that place every time and can imagine that immense fear. And even though I'm with people that say that I'm safe, I really don't know who they are. So,
No, that's great. I might jump down to the other question just while we're kind of talking through some of the fears. But, just some of the other barriers that I suppose that you've come across that people are facing that you're working with that might have surprised you, or for those of us in the room that are not necessarily, you know, working with people every day or living with people that have disability, what are those barriers that people are finding and wanting to overcome, just from all of your different experience? I mean, you've started to highlight some of those barriers. I mean, the story with Evie is a great one in terms of, I loved seeing them, you know, purchase the wheelchair for her to be able to go back onto the beach. But it was about getting back onto the beach to do the work that she'd previously done, and also to have that connection with her boys as well. So it's like the why at the end of the barrier as well. What's really motivating people? And I think you kind of started to speak to that as well, Ben.
But, yeah. I think for me, it's a fear of the unknown. Like it's for many people as well, like they're, whether it be disability or whether it be, you know, mental or just mental physical health or whatever it is that's changing in their world, that there's a real struggle, I think, for people to start working through that process of what does this now mean for them? Like, and so I think you're right, like it's, I guess for our young people, it's simultaneously you're putting new opportunities in front of them. And so when you're putting those new opportunities in front of them, that's that idea of, well, how am I going to handle this, or how am I going to cope with this, or how am I going to be looked after, I think. And so there's probably the learning in it for me is that coming back to maybe what I was saying before, but it's that the importance of that conversation, like that there's it's not necessarily about there being a right or a wrong answer so much as it is about the opportunity to find the answer. And I think that, like, I guess that's also really exciting for me. Yeah, like that's that really curiosity. Exciting in the sense that we're being brave and bold enough to actually, you know, look at opportunities that, you know, over the years, like we've got a chance to do something differently. We've got an opportunity that, you know, to get a little bit creative with an ice cream machine, or to get a bit creative with how, you know, we're engaging young people or people in general, just, you know, in the world around them. And so I think the other really big challenge or barrier for whatever it is that it's that dirty word of assumption. Like it's, you know, that we're living in a society now, probably more than ever, obviously, that has faster, more complicated access to information than we ever have. And so, you know, I guess the other thing I've come to learn about people with a disability is that those disabilities are incredibly unique. You know, they're incredibly individual, and, you know, you can have, you know, in my instance, you know, I know people that are incomplete paraplegic, one is in a wheelchair and one is walking, you know, and so that alone is that, I think for many people blows their mind that there's such a spectrum of even just for that itself. And so I think, yeah, for coming back to just respecting that person, putting that person first and coming back to what can we, you know, what are the opportunities and what are the options for you, irrespective of, you know, what else is going on in your world. And I think, yeah, being able to find solutions in that manner, yeah, it really says a lot, I think, in terms of respecting that person's identity and how they, I guess, how they want to see themselves in the world, you know, you know, we'll keep probably maybe using that example, but I think, again, Evie's that great one, like being able to connect people with what actually is like core to who they are, like, you know, that there's a real, yeah, I think there's so many people that I've certainly encountered, so many young people that have sort of rid themselves off from opportunities or spaces or potential careers because of assumptions, because of misinformation, because of the way that they've been identified. And yeah, if we can overcome that, I think, you know, we're taking some really good steps forward.
And you too, yeah, any other kind of barriers or things that we can all be aware of that people are facing might be surprising for people?
Probably not so surprising.
Or just that we need reminding of.
I'd probably say that the COVID pandemic has kept a lot of people isolated. We've been pretty lucky in Adelaide for the most part, being able to still get out into nature. What I've learned from part of my degree is nature is good for mental health, and it's good to get out in nature. We know that. We know some other weird things, like even having nature inside, like houseplants or even photos of nature can help a bit with restorative ratings and feeling a bit more calm. There's even some papers on imagining nature or like having mental images of nature in your head and feeling good. We did something on that recently at uni. I don't have the actual paper, so I don't want to oversell it. But yeah, we know that that's important, but we also know that COVID has been incredibly isolating for people. And you could say even more so for people with disability, because for a lot of the kids with neurodegenerative disorders like MD or SMA, they're going to appointments all the time. It takes a lot longer. It's a lot more difficult to get out and do things. They've got a certain window of time where they're free to go out and do things. And even more so during COVID when you're stuck at home, what opportunity is there to go into your backyard? It's just a whole lot of extra effort. So that's a unique challenge. It might encourage more people to get houseplants. There might be some other better solutions than houseplants. But yeah, I'll just pose that as a challenge without much of a solution for you. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a great challenge. Yeah, thank you. Mm. And Tricia, any other?
One of the barriers that surprised me, I suppose, was to do with food. And certainly on many of our programs now, we provide lunch for people, even though the activity may only be for 3 hours that we're running. We try and make sure that there's a healthy lunch, which is a wrap and some food and some drink, because it occurred to us that, of course, that is a barrier to a lot of people, especially if you're at home and, you know, you realise, oh, gosh, you know, there's a great activity I can go to, but all I've got is 2-minute noodles in a packet. Well, that's not going to, I can't take that for lunch because people will laugh at me or, you know, and, or nothing else. Can't cook it up. So, and I have, yeah, come across people who have just said, yeah, I can't go. That's it. And what a shame that they've missed out because they haven't had what is the food that is expected, you know, to be seen, I suppose. Or something that isn't accessible for them to take on the bus and to come to an event. So that's been a great opportunity for us to realise that, yep, just put aside a little bit of extra funding to make sure that's available. Apart from the other benefits of being able to provide something healthy for somebody that maybe doesn't have that opportunity to make those decisions you know, to purchase that food themselves. So I like that that's something that's quite easy for us to solve. It doesn't take, you know, big amounts of money or equipment or anything technical. And it's always well received. And of course, who doesn't mind, you know, hanging around afterwards for a bite to eat and to chat to other people, and it just kind of relaxes you a little bit more. And if everybody's got the similar sort of food, well, then you're all kind of equal and enjoying it as well. So I suppose it, with that one also goes with clothing. So a lot of the work that I'm involved with is to do with environmental activities. So bush care and might be planting shrubs and trees and things like that. And of course, a lot of people don't necessarily have the clothing to be able to participate in those kinds of activities. So we've at different times provided funding for opportunities for people to go into the Salvos, which is where I get my gardening clothing from. And so they can go in there, get some boots, get some trousers and a long sleeve shirt so that they're well protected. You know, they get a hat. And again, not much money. It doesn't have to be hundreds of dollars for whiz-bang high-vis vests or anything like that. It's that simple gear so that then people can feel like, yep, they're one of the team and they are well protected, which makes us very happy as well. So simple things that we take for granted aren't always that accessible. So, yeah.
I'd certainly agree. Certainly agree with the food. Like it's, I think we underestimate how powerful. You know, we've talked about it, or at least it's been mentioned a couple of times already tonight, but we underestimate how powerful food is in terms of bringing us together. Mm. And I think, you know, one of the things that we try and do a lot at YouThink is not just sort of these day activities, but to do trips. And one of the sort of, I guess, for me, one of the real incentives to doing that is it allows us the opportunity to share in meals together. And for no other reason than, yeah, for all the reasons you mentioned, yeah, absolutely my experience too, but also just that opportunity that it's a really like healthy distraction for people. Like it, you know, you can bring people together through the process of cooking meals and, or just by simply, you know, it's a lot easier to put people in a room and put food than it is just to put people in a room in that, or should say in nature. I think the other thing as well is that it's something that we can all connect with. Like it's something that's relatable to us, that, you know, we understand sort of its purpose and its value and all those sorts of things. And so for many people that it's a really easy in, I think.
We all have to eat, don't we?
Yeah.
Got another food related thing. So in terms of bringing people together and food, growing your own foods, a really fulfilling activity, even if it's just like a lettuce and you add it to your dinner that night. For some people, obviously it's not so accessible. You can't get a wheelchair out into a garden and pick it and grow it yourself, or you can't have a garden easily in an apartment. So there's some solutions with apartments and like windowsill gardens, which are pretty cool. But I've also found some interesting and very simple solutions for wheelchairs and gardens is essentially just having a table and then the garden bed on top of the table so you can wheel underneath it. And then for people with some other motor issues with like hands and arm movement, you can get more accessible tools that are lightweight or plastic. And that just little amount of assistance without too much of a cost is really impactful. So I think that's a fulfilling activity for people to get around growing their own food and then providing food for other people and bringing them together.
Yeah, fantastic. Yes, I know there's lots of community gardens that are trying to make themselves more accessible to people. But yeah, to have it right there in your own apartment or in your own backyard as well, with all those simple so there are creative, simple solutions that can be thought through that don't cost too much as well. That's great. Really interesting. And I think I'd love Ben for you to share the story about where you were on the slopes, I think, on your Churchill Fellowship. Just because we've talked about, you know, your stories and some of the barriers that are out there. Really keen to kind of talk about your philosophy and why you think this topic is worth talking about and that we need to be talking about it all more, and what we can do in terms of that kind of cultural shift and understanding to removing barriers, and how some other countries are doing it a little bit better than us.
Yeah.
And that we've got a bit to learn in this area as well.
Yeah, I think for me, like, the dream is that one day our communities will be a place where we don't talk about inclusion as this other group.
That's right.
You know, and that we talk about inclusion in a way that we're all celebrating each other and the value and the purpose that we all bring to the community. And, the story you mentioned, throughout my Churchill Fellowship, I had the opportunity to spend some time in Whistler in Canada, and I'm a pretty keen mountain biker, and so as much as the Churchill
Fellowship,
as much as obviously the Churchill Fellowship had some pretty specific outcomes, you know, the opportunity to just go and ride a bike, you know, on Whistler Mountain for a couple of days was certainly not lost on me. And I remember the story basically is, I remember so one of the other great things about Whistler is that there's a chairlift, and so you can get out of having to ride up the mountain. You can just basically get on the chairlift and ride down.
I thought that was pretty good.
It works really well for people like me, especially, that just hate riding up hills. But I remember standing in the line one day, and further up the line, I could see that there was a young guy in an adaptive mountain bike, so a four-wheel mountain bike that had been designed for people with a disability or just maybe people that are a bit unsteady on two wheels. I remember looking at this young man and naively thinking, oh, this will be interesting. Just trying to work out in my head how on earth, you know, he and this bike would get on this chairlift. It was somewhat clear that he had a friend with him, but basically the people around him very much appeared to kind of be in no way connected to him. And so I guess I was just watching with interest, and sort of the further up to the line he got, and when he got to the front of the line, obviously the way that it works basically is that the bike rack comes through first. And so the idea is that you put your bike on and then you get on the seat behind it. And so I'm watching, and next thing you know, like just without sort of any kind of coordination, but just, his mate has basically just picked him up out of his bike. The two people behind have grabbed the bike, loaded that onto the rack. His mate's loaded him into the chair, and off they went. And I remember sitting there, and for me, I guess the real learning in that was it just looked normal. That there was nothing about it that was sort of, to be honest, actually out of the ordinary. Like it was just, right. And I think for me that was, and then as the day went on, it became, once I'd made aware that sort of these adaptive mountain bikes just started sticking out really clearly to me. And it was just, all of a sudden started realizing that a lot of trails throughout Whistler Mountain have been built with adaptive mountain bikes in mind. So, but unless you're actually looking for it necessarily, you weren't noticing it. But trails that are just a little bit wider and a little bit smoother and all those sorts of things. And the next, coming down one of those trails and they were going that fast, I couldn't identify them at all, but someone in an adaptive mountain bike has literally pretty much just launched themselves over my head, and away they went down the trail. And I remember sitting at the end of that day, I guess I had at other points in that trip, similar experiences where it was a really beautiful thing to see in New Zealand, like just being in the forest in Rotorua and just seeing females riding bikes solo. Like, and that's not something that we see too often here in Australia. Just those little bits of what I would call, working towards that sense of inclusion where things are just normal. Mm-hmm. So it gave me great hope and great confidence that, that we can and we will get there. But I think, that normalization piece is super important, that this is not about finding ways in which to do things differently for those that we consider or may be perceived as different. It's about finding ways that we can do things together. And yes. And so that day on Whistler Mountain will forever stick in my mind, because as I said, it just gave me phenomenal belief that this is not about celebrating our differences, but it's actually about finding ways in which we can come together in all of this.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, thank you. I loved that story. And I think you've probably never looked at a trail in the same way ever again, have you?
No.
It's when you have those experiences, and hopefully all of us won't look at trails the same as when we go out and about now.
And I should mention, that progress is already happening.
Yes.
For those for those that know are in the mountain bike community, that they'd know that just recently we've Fox Creek sort of the redevelopment post Cuddly Creek fires has just opened up its first adaptive mountain bike trail. And and the buzz around that trail itself, not just because it's a good trail, but it's an adaptive trail. And I really hope that that's just the start of many, many more opportunities like this to come. You mentioned obviously Deep Creek before, that I know that the work that's being done up at Nilpena on the new national park right up in the Northern Flinders, that the paths up there are looking that they'll be accessible as well. And so we're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. And to help us keep going on the right track, what are some things that we can all do from here, whether it be ponder a little bit more, read something else, do something? What would you say to those of us in the room and our friends online? There's a couple, the few key things that you'd encourage people to do.
I think in terms of inclusivity, what Ben said, there's sort of a difference between PR inclusivity and real inclusivity. So a lot of the times people with disability will be shoved into a group for their inclusive group, and they're actually separated from everybody and everyone gawks on them and it's not very nice. Yes, everybody's an individual, and yes, people with disability have more individualized needs, but if they're not feeling connected within a group, it's not fair, and they're not going to have a good time at all. So it's important to yes, understand individuality, but also try and work towards, if you're going to have a group thing or if you're going to have an event, make sure everybody's working together in some capacity, because it's more impactful and more meaningful to the person.
Fantastic. Thanks, Harry.
And I think probably just similarly along those lines, our expectations often are, I suppose, unrealistic as well. And I think it's really good for us to just take a step back and think that, well, nature doesn't have to be, you know, the 30-mile hike. It can be getting a bunch of flowers and just enjoying them and making sure that others have that opportunity, allowing others to have that opportunity, because maybe that's their first step. And, recognising if you're looking around and it's just full of people just like you, so why is that? And maybe, you know, is there somebody else that may like to join you, but what is that reason why they're not there? They might not want to join you because there's a bunch of people just like you. But you know, just for us to stop and think and take some time, because we're always rushing to do the best thing and the right thing, and sometimes we just need to take a step back and enjoy ourselves and look after ourselves, and then that enables us to see it in new eyes and open us up for other people too.
So that looking around the room, yeah, is so important. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the makeup of this, and what power do I have to change that or invite someone else into that? Yeah.
Or ask them why they're not there, because like I say, maybe it's not of any interest to them, and I'd like,
yes,
I really want you to be here, but you know, this is of no interest to that person. So maybe I can be, seeing what they want to do, and then maybe I can be part of that as opposed to bringing them into my space.
Yes, yes. So outward. Yeah, fantastic. And what can we do, Ben?
Yeah, I think to probably just expand on that, I think it's just appreciating that nature gives us time and space. And I think that time and space allows us to, I think, really work towards all the things that we've been talking about. I think I said rather start, like, whether it be over a meal or whether it just simply be, in a community garden, or whether it be on a walk, or, you know, whether it's on a multi-day expedition, whatever it is, that it's also about giving ourselves the opportunity to have those conversations. And, that's certainly, from my experience, that that's where these solutions and these opportunities come from, is that when we've got that opportunity to sit down and to, I guess, seek to understand before being understood, that there's that, great value, great learning, I think great social capital in being able to have those conversations.
Yes, and having that stance of curiosity, as you were saying at the start as well.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. So speaking of curiosity, we're getting down to the wire here. If any of our friends online or in the space have some questions, please pop them in the chat, or there's already some there, is there?
Well, we had a question, but you've just answered it beautifully.
Brilliant.
So I'm sure they're grateful for that.
Efficient.
But I actually had a question. With a lot of the really awesome things that are happening accessibility-wise in parks and big programs and things, they're awesome, but there's not tons of them yet. And I think it's still really hard for people to get active in their local area, and you might have to apply to the NDIS to get onto some of these programs and things. At the same time, we're also the local friends groups and land care and things are all kind of aging demographics and need to bring in more people. Are there ways that local conservation groups, like neighbourhood regeneration groups and things like that, could make their places more welcoming? Obviously, there's such a huge range of accessibility differences, but just wondering if there's ways that we can get people out more locally.
Can I hand all that to you, Tricia?
Sure. I've always liked the idea and have found it to be quite successful to to kind of not necessarily work in that group space, because quite often people don't want to be part of a group. And I often say, you know, do they want to hang out with Tricia on a Sunday afternoon and listen to her carry on all day? You know, well, possibly not. But and think that they have to do that on every Sunday. So those great events are brilliant, you know, where they're big events. Everybody loves to go to music festivals. It's all these sort of big one-off sort of things. And I think there's lots of value in that, because lots of opportunities to lose yourself in there, mingle with others, be one of many, as opposed to being the odd person in the very small group that comes out every fortnight or whatever. And they're always incredibly successful. People can bring their friends along, their family along, and have a good time. And quite often you can, you know, get some food and those kinds of things. And then some people will go, yep, well, I've done my bit for the environment for the year. That's great. And that's fabulous, because they've given up that time. And others will be inspired and go, I really enjoyed that. I'm going to look for another one as well.
So the planting events that you're talking about.
It could be a planting event. It could be anything at all. It could be a big bio blitz in a particular area. It could be Clean Up Australia Day. It could be any of those.
And those are all much more localised, aren't they?
That's right. So something close to home in your own community. It could be a community garden, but instead of joining a community garden, it may be that the community garden say, you know, this is our open day. Come and try it. But really, it's not to get new members. It's just come to this one, and then next month you can go to the one across the other, you know, suburb or something like that. So I think you're right to create those different opportunities, but just to get away from those expectations that you then have to stay, and then
you
then have to be the treasurer or the secretary or, you know, organising all those boring things. Let's get away from that kind of style, and that's what's sort of engaging younger people as well, I think.
I think what you can do individually as young people, maybe not join a group, but if you go out to coffee with your friends, you might want to go on a walk with the coffee or go sit outside. But some people I've known with like high-paced office jobs and going to meetings, they'll bring a pair of running shoes and go on the meeting as a walk. Or like me and my partner, we'll go to the Botanic Gardens when she's finished class at uni or I finished class and we're going to get lunch. Like just taking the time to go out, even if you're having to do something high-paced like an office job or go to meetings, you can still do it outside. And sometimes that might make the meeting more enjoyable or less tense if it's something serious. And then like councils and things see that people are using those spaces and hopefully contribute more to the environment and that sort of aspect, and maybe looking at climate change a bit more if they're seeing people out in the gardens and things. But yeah, I think from a personal level, it's just, I guess it started with COVID, but trying to make your activities somewhat nature related, even if you don't say it's nature related.
Mm. That's great. Thank you. Any other questions?
We do have another. We have one that's just come in, actually, from Ryan, director of the Nature Festival.
Hi, Ryan.
So this year we've been putting more. We've been trying to include more accessibility in events and things like that. And he was wondering, he'd love any thoughts from the panelists on any more things that we could do to make the Nature Festival more accessible. And I guess that goes towards everybody else's events and things, so it's not just Ryan getting feedback for next year.
I think with the inclusivity stuff, with my event, I didn't say only kids with disability come, like they brought their siblings and things. So again, including a bigger group, they're not isolated.
I guess my encouragement would be to anyone that's out there feeling like they're not being included, for them to know that they matter and that they've got value, and that obviously just, you know, to speak to individual circumstances or situations, whether it's stressful or anything challenging, but I think it's really important for people to know that they deserve to feel included, and no matter whether that's disability or whether that's because they don't feel like they've got the time or they're feeling isolated because of this pandemic, or whether because they don't have the funds or the means to whatever that might be. But I guess as I've been saying, like, inclusivity relies on all of us, and the people. If we're not able to have those conversations, if we're not able to meet with those people and understand, it's challenging. Like, it's challenging for everyone. And I guess the other thing that I'd add to that is to say that if you're someone that's feeling like you're being excluded, know that it's not your responsibility alone. Like, it's that, this is where the community, that we all need to start accepting that collectively, that inclusivity relies on all of us, that relies on all of us to play a role, and so sometimes that can be as simple as fronting up, and hopefully someone else that part of that community group or it's part of that cafe or whatever it is, that's good enough to sit there and say, hey, how can we make this easier for you? And I really hope, from all my interactions, I would say for the Nature Festival, that that's certainly been my experience, that that those conversations are happening in a really humanised way. And I think the more that our communities at large continue to have those conversations. So I guess more than anything, that my encouragement, and I think that's probably coming back to sort of where we started for me with young people at youth, and it's a credit to them that they've been able to, better use the expression, get themselves out of the house. And by being able to do that, that's given us... collaboratively a space which we can start to really build on, normalising an opportunity for them.
Fantastic. We're over time, but I thought Trish might have something to add.
Us living in such a culturally diverse community, the festival is fantastic, but it's the website has no... I've tried to get some of the people that I'm working with, onto the site, and it's too difficult for them to manage because it's all beautifully in English and not very accessible for them. So there may be some opportunities. Of course, you cannot have, as the organisation I work with doesn't have a website for, Chinese and different cultures, but there needs to be a lot more of that involvement, I think, because, again, it's just being promoted to the people who can read and who can
have
read English
internet access.
All of that obvious stuff that sometimes we forget about because it is quite difficult, I suppose. So that access for all of those other cultures that we're all working with, of course, in schools and universities, aren't necessarily. And so if it's not that sort of quick, oh, well, this is great, they'll go to the next thing and they'll look for something else, which is such a shame because, of course, this is what we want to promote it to.
It goes all the way through, your communications, doesn't it? And, it's a challenge to us all, I think, definitely, in all the work that we're doing. But, credit to the as a host of some other events, though, I thought it was really great that they had a checklist of all the different things that you had to think through before you run an event, and that accessibility was a part of that. And I think that's becoming more and more mainstream in a lot of event places and everything, which is really great. It's that thing that we were talking about, just stopping and thinking about how do I make this more possible for a greater range of people. Mm-hmm. So, thank you. Well, we have come to the close and we've gone over a little bit. So thank you, everyone, for your time and those online. And we'd particularly like to, recognise this lovely venue here and RI Oz and Cosmos Magazine, who you'll see this online through their work as well, who've worked with the Nature Festival and all the supporting organisations to host these daily discussions, which are going on every night during the festival.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. Remember that you can head to cosmosmagazine.com via the link in the description for more great content. You can also subscribe to Cosmos Magazine, Australia's only science print magazine, and Cosmos Weekly, with its unique approach to how science, current affairs, and the economy intersect. You can watch and listen to all our Cosmos briefings via the link that you'll also find in the description. And remember, if you support science and its communication, please support our work at the Royal Institution of Australia. I'm Chuck Smeaton, and our executive producer is Catherine Roberts. Thank you.